Tap into the passion and vision of well-known entertainment luminaries with Thinking Out Loud. Go on a journey with unfiltered access to today's media innovators. Hear their strategy for rising above the crowded landscape. Important lessons and valuable wisdom that only comes from real industry experience.
Hello, I'm Vicki Linz, President and CEO of CTAM, a marketing organization focused on the media entertainment technology industry. And today I'm speaking with Aaron Schmidt, Chief Product Placement Officer at Ben. Now, Ben is a global creator economy AI company that integrates brands into influencer streaming and other entertainment content. So I'm really looking forward, Aaron, to speaking with you about the creative side of the industry today. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Vicki.
So I think the most logical place to start is tell us about Ben.
Let me tell you about Ben. So we are really the aggregate of two pioneers in integrating products into content. We acquired two different companies, one Norm Marshall and Associates that started doing product placement 40 years ago, and the other Plaid Social Labs, which started doing influencer marketing over 12 years ago. Under the umbrella of being an AI and technology company focused on the creator economy. So when we think about that, what we're doing is we're truly supporting the creator economy by understanding how content can perform, how content can perform better, and bringing brands into the fold, into those content opportunities to invest in that content, to support that content in every way possible so that we as consumers can to appreciate the art that comes out of the creation of content.
There is so much to unpack there. And I find it all so interesting. I'm not really sure where to start. So why don't we start with something rather basic, which is tell us a little bit about how product placement comes about today. Who contacts whom and what gets a conversation started to try to figure out how to marry a brand with content?
Yeah, so we'll start on the production side, and I'll actually take it back 40 years ago. Starting with the people who really are on set. So transportation coordinators, set decorators, costume designers, prop masters. Those employees of a production are responsible for sticking to a specific budget while also delivering what a director, actor, producer wants on screen. So auto and spirits and really high-end value items 40 years ago were a great resource to provide to productions in exchange for exposure. That's kind of the genesis of product placement, is you begin at this spot where you really were empowering the art to be created by providing these products, allowing the art to be created, but also not taking away from their budgets. As technology advanced, you know, DVRs in the late 90s and early 2000s that started to interrupt or take away the interruption of content, but it also took away advertising dollars from those productions, and productions became more expensive to create. And then you had Netflix actually start to create their own content, original content, original IP that lived on their platform with high caliber talent, both behind the scenes and in front of the camera. And with that, advertisers were looking for other ways to meet consumers at the same time that productions were looking for ways to add to their budgets. Content became more expensive to make because you are using better talent, especially when you're talking about TV. You're using higher end talent behind the camera and in front of the camera. You have just better quality content than you did 40 years ago. And so what we've done is we've partnered with the Producers Guild of America to work directly at the producer level to actually understand how brands can help pay for integrations and help with that. We've had producers tell us they've licensed better music for their series to make it a better experience for the viewer. They've been able to do extra days shoots. They've been able to create that big action scene that wouldn't have happened without those brand dollars. So when it comes to today and how that matchmaking happens, we represent brands in this space. So we're constantly navigating the landscape. And then we're working both above the line at that producer level and below the line with the transportation coordinators, prop masters, to find the right match between brand and content.
That is so interesting. So I've got to ask you, So I'm going to back up just a moment and share with our listeners a little bit about your background, because you have some iconic product placements under your belt, and they include James Bond switching his favorite drink to a Heineken, Ant-Man working in a Baskin-Robbins instead of a Chipotle, and Steve and Nancy eating Kentucky Fried Chicken's finger-licking good fried chicken in Stranger Things. So, you know, some really cool marriages of brand and content there. You've got to have some good stories to go along with some of these many years of experience in the business. Can you take us behind the scenes and tell us a story about how one of the product placement efforts came about?
Absolutely. Well, I have been doing this a long time. I'm in my 17th year, and I'm actually second generation. So my mom did the BMW in James Bond many, many years ago. But my favorite integration would be, if you've ever seen the movie Zombieland, there is a main character, which is a brand called Hostess Snack Cakes. And within the Hostess portfolio, there's Twinkies. And the main character in Zombieland, Tallahassee, loves Twinkies, but they're in this post-apocalyptic world and they keep going into these markets and all they have is snowballs. They are on this hunt to like kill the zombies, do all the things they need to do. But at the end of the day, Tallahassee just really wants a Twinkie. Spoiler alert. At the very end, he opens a Hostess truck and out falls all these Twinkies. Well, my experience with that was we read the script. It was already scripted in. We represented Hostess, but Hostess was in bankruptcy at the time. So they were really conservative about how they approached opportunities because they didn't want to be represented or look like they were spending in a way that they shouldn't. Luckily, this was a scripted opportunity, so it was really providing assets. So I had to find a truck. I found a Little Debbie truck, had it painted and wrapped as a Hostess truck. Then I had to order, I think it was like 4,000 Twinkies or something crazy. I can't really remember what I had to do there, but tons of product for these amazing scenes. But the best part was I was reading the script and at one point a zombie was sucking the filling out of the Twinkie like it was bone marrow out of a bone and had to go work with the producer and the writers to kind of take that scene out because Hostess is a family brand and it just didn't quite make sense for them. But it's one of my all-time favorite integrations. And just, it was a lot of fun tactically too.
So the ideal scenario for a product placement success story is a true integration. And that really happens early in a production. And so to what degree are you and the team at Ben really trying to stay in front of the development process and know what's coming down the pike and what's percolating before production companies may even be thinking about product placements?
Yeah, it's honestly 99% of our job is to stay ahead of it. Building those, Hollywood is old school and relationships are incredibly important. So we've spent the last 40 years, many of us are long-term alumni of Ben, of this organization. We've spent so many years investing in those relationships so that we can be ahead of it. I was actually talking to the Producers Guild of America. I don't know if anyone watched Queen's Gambit. Loved it. It was like my favorite show of last year. That script sat for 30 years before it was made. I'm like, how could we do better at talking about what's even in the pipeline, what's out there for consumption, and bring brand dollars to help get it funded and get it going? Obviously, that's an example where it was a period piece, but what if a chess company, even a digital chess company, was even just a part of the investment of that project? So for us, we've always been ahead of the curve working with creators. But I think we can still do better. I think there's still so much opportunity out there that could use extra funding or a little bit of a push to get it made.
Okay, I'm going to shift gears just a little bit. You mentioned your mom and James Bond and BMW, and that is so super cool. One of the things that I'm really fascinated about, there's so many transitions going on in our industry these days, all over the place. And one of the ones that really fascinates me is the transition that's happening between brands, but I mean entertainment brands and consumers. So consumers used to be more loyal to network brands back in the day where there were just a handful of broadcast networks. You sort of knew what to expect from each one. And then we had the proliferation of cable networks, and they were even more defined, and people sought out their favorite networks to watch their favorite type of genre and programming. And then that evolved to some program brands really gaining traction, and viewers sought out the program brands, which then, of course, grew and expanded into franchise brands, which became so valuable and important. And now you've got streaming brands thrown in there too, although the streamers tend to be a conglomeration of a lot of those other brands. So what a brand mess we have going on out in the ecosystem. And I think consumers' loyalty to those entertainment brands has really shifted. And franchise brands certainly carry a lot of sway. So I would imagine in looking at product placement and the value and impact potential, understanding those dynamics and marrying product brands to whether it's a program brand like Stranger Things or a franchise brand like James Bond becomes really important and valuable. So one of the great product placement success stories is your mom's work on BMW and Bond. What does that look like today, and how do you navigate those brand dynamics in determining where you want to put product brands?
Yeah, you know, it's such a beautiful industry to be in right now because content is so decentralized. And I think to your point, loyalty to a specific network or a streamer is obsolete. As consumers, we want content made for us. We don't really care where it's coming from. And yes, there are the franchises, there are, you know, the Marvels of the world, and understanding that genre package and bringing brands. So we do have brands investing in franchises, and we do have, because Hollywood is a small community, you create loyalty, right? And so we do navigate that. But I think more importantly, the way that we encourage brands to look at this space, I get this question a lot. Should we work on Netflix or should we work on HBO Max? Well, neither of those parties take placement fees. They're not advocates of product placement. It only happens naturally and organically when you're working with the creators in the right way. But my answer is truly, don't look at either one of them as a singular opportunity for you. You need to look at content holistically because it is so decentralized. Even if you're talking about influencer content, there's long form influencer content that lives on YouTube. TikTok is now launching their longer format on TikTok. So I just think looking at it through the lens of a platform loyalty or a studio loyalty is a disservice to the brand and a disservice to the creator, because even creators aren't necessarily 100% loyal to a specific platform, network, et cetera. So we really encourage brands to look at the landscape holistically, understand the audience that's watching that specific series, understanding the characters within that series or film, and understanding contextually how you want to be portrayed in a piece of content. And that is where your success will come from. And it's really starting to break apart, I think, that loyalty to specific platforms, genres, et cetera.
Is it more common for a brand to be integrated into a series during the creation process or later in the series existence? And if it's later in its existence, is it more challenging once a series, like let's use Stranger Things as an example, became a big hit, right? Lots of cultural equity there, lots of recognition. Is it harder to become part of a series once it's hit that level of traction? And how does that part of the process work? Or is it just depending on what's needed at any given point of a series production?
That is a great question. It is absolutely harder, especially when you reach the fame of Stranger Things after a season one launch, for brands to come in season two, especially for categories that are really important to the storytelling. So if you think about a Ray Donovan, he was established in season one in a Mercedes. We worked for four seasons to change that to a Cadillac. And it took us I think, an actual 5 seasons to actually get that transition to happen through the right creative, through the right model being released, all of those things.
So I understand why you wanted to change it to a Cadillac. Why would the production have been interested in making that transition?
Well, I don't think they were. And that's why it took us so long to get there. It didn't make sense for the creative. And that's where I encourage every brand to understand that the creative is going to drive the final decision. And so Cadillac was very patient. They're great partners, and they're great partners to the community. And they just continually were pitching Liev Schreiber, Showtime, on what was coming down the pipeline. And finally, there was a transitional moment in which Ray Donovan was and his family were moving to the East Coast from the West Coast. So there was an opportunistic moment for there to be a car shift. Cadillac had just launched the XT6, and it hadn't even released yet. So you had a prototype vehicle on set, and all of the stars aligned, if you will, to make that moment happen. And so there's moments in which upfront you make these deals season long. He was also a Johnny Walker drinker throughout that, so other spirits couldn't really get involved. But then you're just constantly, our job is to constantly be trying to find other ways around that and see if there's a new opportunity.
So in order to have that level of sensitivity, understanding, intuition, insight into the evolution of a script, of a narrative, of a piece of creative work, your team must have a really interesting skill set and type of experience to be able to do that. Can you share with us a little bit about what kind of talent do you have working on these projects? Not everybody would read a Ray Donovan script and understand that transitional moment and that opportunity that exists there.
Agreed. And I always say that they are the experts at reading between the lines. So if you're reading a script and you're understanding the story arc, you're understanding the life-changing moment, whatever that might be within that script, and you can find those branding opportunities, you can find their organic fit. The people who work for us specifically that are in relation to the content, so they're the ones who are talking to the content creators, are number one, first and foremost, content buffs. Like, they live and breathe content. If I want to know what show to watch next, I go to them because they're going to tell me exactly what I need to know based on my preferences, not even their preferences, but my preferences. They know what I like and they can tell me exactly what I should be watching. They're just true lovers of content. But we have team members that have come from the studios. So our head of content came from Warner Brother TV. She's an Emmy nominated member from that team. She's been with us for 14 years. We have a team member who came from the production of Ray Donovan. We have a team member who came from a network like A&E, and they kind of give us that full, well-rounded approach to the content space because they understand the creative needs. But they also, if they've worked for a studio specifically, understand the budgetary constraints and where brands can add value.
So you referenced them as being experts at reading between the lines. I would suggest that today's audience is also pretty expert at reading between the lines. And we certainly know that younger generations are incredibly sensitive to and adamant about authenticity. So let's talk a little bit about audiences and how product placement plays out there. What you started early in our conversation about talking about product placement 40 years ago. What's different about it today? What sensitivities and strategies are used today to really ensure success? And how challenging can it be to connect with an audience?
Yeah, I think, you know, what's been interesting is the consumer today, specifically Gen Z and younger millennials, because they've grown up in the world of influencer and watching social media that has, you know, very overt product placement with calls to action, hashtag sponsored. What we're understanding now based on that audience is actually more excited to see product placements in content because they know that you're supporting the creators that they love and they know that you're supporting the creative to be made. So that's the first piece of that puzzle. I think it's been really interesting to see this like kind of love and excitement for product placement. I think there's also more desirability coming from the productions too, but I think unanimously, everyone wants to see the authentic product placement. And when you think about authenticity, there was, you know, what, 14 years ago, when if you were watching a linear television program and you saw a brand, it was likely 99.9% going to be an advertiser. And if that brand was not an advertiser, they would either blur out the logo, black out the logo, or use nondescript. So they'd use a soda pop can that just said soda on it. Well, our research actually says that that's more distracting. It takes you out of the experience versus immersing you in the experience because you're not seeing a brand that's a part of your natural day-to-day life. So what you're seeing today is the authenticity of what we live and breathe. Art imitates life. And so we need to ensure that content does the same. And so what we're really trying to do, our approach to product placement, if you will, is to understand what a brand is trying to accomplish, go to producers and say, here's what we're looking to do. Does this make sense? We read in this script specifically, let's talk about Zillow really quickly. Zillow was looking to target moments of life change. They were really wanted to be a part of people's lives when they were experiencing a big change in their life. So our team was reading scripts and going to a producer and say, we noticed that this character got a new job, or this character is starting a family, or they're getting married. We think that Zillow could be great. What are your thoughts? And then let the creator come to us with how that could come into play. And then you have an audience that's actually happy with the advertising that's happening.
My brain is going in two different directions. So I'll go one way and then I'll veer back and go the other. So I feel compelled to ask, certain brands have cultural equity and other brands are trying to build it. And so what's different from your side of the business in working with a brand? Let's use a big brand like Coca-Cola, right? You use the generic soda pop can may actually be more distracting than just having a Coke can sitting there because that's so ingrained into the cultural equity of soda consumption in the States, at least, and around the world. How is it different when you're working to place a brand like Coke that brings a cultural identity with it versus a brand that wants to break in and start to establish some kind of cultural connection with the audience and perhaps is looking to a program brand to help them do that?
Yeah, and it's two different challenges. So one we represent Frito-Lay, and Frito-Lay has massive brand awareness. I think the awareness on Cheetos is 98% or something crazy. So they're not looking at this program to drive awareness. What they're looking to do is drive brand salience. So really creating that passion point with viewer to that content. And to your point, really creating that cultural moment, but also just making it relatable for the consumer. So what we've really, our strategy in the space is to ensure that contextually and character-wise, we're matching the right products with those two pieces to make it more impactful for that audience. So that's one piece of the puzzle is, you know, it's either brand salience, kind of building that brand, creating that cultural moment. It's brand protection. So a lot of brands like a Coca-Cola Coca-Cola's had a program for probably 40 years as well. It's a lot of brand protection because it is a synonymous soda, right? And so making sure that it's not in bad movies where you're not associating it to obesity or, you know, over drinking of Coca-Cola, things that would be triggering for that brand. And I think the last piece for a truly known brand is also when they're making brand pivots. So as an example, General Motors is committed to 0, 0, 0, 0 emissions, 0 accidents. and I can't remember the third zero off the top of my head right now, but that is our focus. Yes, our consistently we're creating scale for them with integrations of their brands, but also now taking that initiative after 40 years of working for them, we've always been focused on what's next on the horizon for them, because life also imitates art. And we want to make sure that what's happening in life is being seen on screen as well. And then I think for emerging brands, that's the more fun challenge, if you will, because you have this amazing opportunity to actually educate. If you think about a creator, if they're working on a series or even a feature film, they're in the trenches for 6 months out of the year, 14-hour days. They don't really know what's going on in the world. And I'm not disparaging by any means. How can they? Because their life is consumed with creating their project. So that's where we come in and we're reading those scripts and we're reading between the lines and we're saying, oh, you have this amazing opportunity. This is a new brand. This is a new opportunity. This is how it's being used in the world today. This is how a character could use it to actually help drive your story forward.
So that's a very interesting point. And that connects to the other direction I mentioned I wanted to go in the conversation. One of the brands that I didn't mention on the list earlier is the celebrity brand, right? Individuals have brands. And how sensitive do you need to be to the talent that's actually in a given production that, you know, might be consuming the product or using the product in some way? And how much does that come into play in whether or not you're comfortable putting the product in the hands of that person?
It very much comes into play. And I'd actually look at this in three different ways. One, obviously brand protection. So I think about spirits all the time. If somebody has had a DUI or some sort of alcohol related issue, if they are a known alcoholic, we as a representative of a spirits brand cannot align with that actor and therefore cannot align with that character. It's few and far between. Because obviously talent will no longer be in a show or a series if they have really terrible things associated with them. I think the next piece is talent also has their own brand deals. So a lot of times maybe they can't use a specific water because they have a sports drink partnership, or they're invested in, you know, you have Diddy who's invested in Ciroc. So of course, anything he does has to be Ciroc related. And I think the last piece is just making sure that you are looking at this holistically and being a loyalist to every aspect of a piece of a production, including the talent. So Mark Wahlberg, Budweiser started supporting him very early on in his career. I can't say this for fact, but I'm pretty sure that every piece of content that Mark Wahlberg has ever been in has Budweiser product placement in it because they supported him so early on. So there's so many elements to the talent on screen that you kind of have to take into consideration.
There are so many different dimensions to getting this right. In your experience, what's the one that goes wrong most often? What doesn't work?
Yeah, I think if brands look at product placement as a 30-second spot, it will fail. We've seen it time and time again where you're watching a piece of content and all of a sudden you feel like you're watching a commercial in a piece of content. And that's when you offend the viewer. That's when you're taken out of the experience as a viewer. And that's when both the brand and the creator have ruined that experience. And I think the one piece when I started this early on, talking to clients and trying to bring clients into the world of product placement, that was the hard conversation we had to have, is they wanted to guarantee time on screen and guarantee certain talking points. And we'd have to have the bold conversation that this is not a 30-second spot. We don't want it to be. We want the creators to be telling your story for you because they're the trusted ambassadors. They're the ones that the viewers want to hear from, not you. So I think that's what our DNA is. And as long as you stick to allowing the creator to tell it, it's great. But I think the biggest challenge with product placement is when brands force fit the content.
That's a really excellent point, because entertainment today, more so than ever before, is driving the cultural conversation. And ideally, brands want to be part of it in an appropriate, authentic way. But in order for them to achieve that, they really need to trust the creators and to be integrated directly into the storylines. So we call it product placement, but we're really talking about a product partnership here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that's the beauty of it, is that when products do partner with content products, if you will, you get really a beautiful experience. And we've had things that I would never have thought would have come as far as they have. We did an integration with ADT in a series, and they came back to a second season to do a whole other piece because they loved how it came to life. And like, that's true partnership. That's investing in that creative community, and they invest back into you.
Let's shift gears and talk about technology a little bit. AI is changing all kinds of opportunities, creating new ones, redirecting old ones. What role does tech play in your business?
Yeah, so our AI within product placement is helping us predict unproven properties. So when you ask that question of, should you get into Stranger Things in season one? I think as humans, we're very biased towards content. And unless we've seen the trailer and we get excited about it, it's really hard for us to wrap our heads around unproven content, especially when the talent might not be A-list, whatever that might look like. And so we've really developed our AI solution to be understanding how a piece of content, with basically just understanding their synopsis, the cast, who's behind the camera, all of those aspects. And we're predicting how well that piece of content will perform, which is opening up so many opportunities for brands to invest in content because it's taking that bias out of the equation. And we don't have to oversell something like a Stranger Things because our AI is predicting that this will be a very popular show on Netflix. And then the other piece from a brand perspective is, we're constantly being asked to measure our success and compare it to a 30-second spot. So one piece that's really important is the efficiency of the spend. So whether they're spending with us or investing in the piece of content, so we've developed an algorithm that's helping us predict the long-term impact of content. I'll tell you one more anecdote. Sorry, I have so much to say. So thank you for letting me.
I want to go back to audience for a minute. I'd be remiss if I didn't reference that Netflix just released their earnings recently, and the headline has been that they're going to introduce some form of advertising. And streaming obviously has shifted consumer behavior. We're starting to see the pendulum swing back a little with some audience opting in for ad-supported programming to try to curb the cost of subscribing to all their favorite streaming services. And what does that do to your business? You must have seen a bump from the proliferation of streaming and from the ad-free content driving demand and interest in product placement. Do you anticipate that to wane a bit now that advertising seems to be coming into this part of the ecosystem in a much more robust way? Do you think there's room for everybody in all different iterations?
Yeah, I think it definitely changes our conversation around being in non-ad supported spaces. But I think the overall desire to steer clear of advertising is still there. I mean, we know that 90% of consumers use ad blockers, and that even if you are seeing an advertisement, you might be getting up and going, making your cup of tea, whatever that might be. But I think more importantly for us, yes, we did see an increase in desirability for product placement, but we have invested so much in the last 2 years to understand the true value of product placement. And when you are advertising and integrating your brand, you actually have higher performance on attribution than if you were only advertising or if you were only doing product placement. We see product placement as an and solution to advertising. It gives you that long tail impact, so it will never go away. You buy that 30-second spot, or you buy that spot, and we don't know how Netflix's advertising is going to look. I know Reed Hastings said the other day that it won't look like traditional advertising, but it's still like theoretically will likely only live in that viewership moment, and likely they'll sell new spots 3 months later, but a product placement lives on. And so there's that benefit of it. There's the cultural alignment and awareness and building cultural building for a brand that happens. So I think for us, it's really about making sure that we're going to the market saying that we are the and solution. We believe in the 30-second spot because that's not what product placement is. We are not going to tell that story through the lens of a content creator. But here are the other attributes that come from product placement, and it actually enhances your 30-second spot. You get more when you're doing both than if you're doing just one.
I think the direction that this part of the business is headed is so fascinating. I think that you have illuminated a lot of the opportunities for us today and educated our listeners on all of the impact that product placement done well can have on the business, not just on the actual creative or the consumer experience, but on the business model as a whole. And so thank you for walking us through it and for sharing so much of your experience and insight with us. What have I not asked you that you would like us to know?
I mean, what is the future, I guess?
So what does the future look like?
Well, let me think about this. No, I think I spend a lot of time lying in bed at night thinking about what the future of product placement is and making sure that we're ahead of the curve on all of those pieces. But as we talk about advertising and we talk about these opportunities, to me, there is so much power in product placement, and there's this desirability that's built through the viewer experience. My desire is to have shoppable content that is not intrusive. I think Amazon is primed for this. Obviously, they have the biggest marketplace in the world, and they also have a great streaming platform. They already have their little toggle at the bottom that pops up and you can understand like who's in that scene, all of these things. Imagine if that can be a shoppable moment where if I see a dress, if I see a snack food, if I see any of these things, I can click to buy. That to me then drives even more attribution and more engagement within that piece of content, and will provide more impact for both brand. And ideally then that piece of content can see residuals from that as well and help fund the next piece of content.
That would bring a whole new dimension to the business model, which could benefit, as you just pointed out, so many different constituents. It would certainly be a win for consumers who really want it when they want it and want to click to get it right then. A couple of times in our conversation, you've mentioned the power of story. And so I just want to say thank you, because you've really woven a very powerful story today about the value and impact of product placement and the opportunities that exist around it. And it has been an absolute pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much, Vicki. It was so great chatting with you. And I really just loved your desire to learn so much about product placement too. It's a fun topic. And it's really, I hope everyone understands that product placement is an incredible opportunity to empower all of us to watch the content we love.
Well, I think it's an interesting win for folks to start to understand the different aspects of the business that product placement can fuel outside of just the benefit to the brand that's being placed. And so for me, this has been a really enlightening, interesting conversation. And I'm sure for many of our listeners, it will be as well.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time and for having me on your podcast.
Absolutely.
Hope you found this Thinking Out Loud conversation interesting and perhaps even thought-provoking. There are more on the way. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review.